Good evening. My name is Paula Ait, Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all here tonight to this evening's council meeting on Monday the 6th of February 2023. A warm welcome to those people in the public gallery who are joining us today, and also to those people who haven't yet turned off their phones. If you could turn off your phones, please. But also a warm welcome to those people who are watching along on YouTube. It's 5:30pm and so I declare the meeting officially open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirm, Miss.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land and pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Ait, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, Director of Governance... No, we don't have Mr Breen. Nope, sorry. Cross that one off. The Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Fox, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, our Manager and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have no apologies this evening. Before we begin the proceedings on the agenda, I just wanted to acknowledge the passing of two members of the Kingborough community recently. The first of which was Mr Paul Gilby. Paul was a long-term member of the Kingborough Disability Inclusion and Access Committee for many years, and through that he made a tremendous contribution to Kingborough. He had a background as an architect but also had lived experience of disability himself, and so he was a really strong contributor to discussions on improving accessible facilities in our area. He will be greatly missed, and so on behalf of councillors and also of all members of the Access Committee, many of whom worked with Paul over years, I send my deepest sympathy to his wife Meg and to their extended family. I also wanted to acknowledge the passing of Neil Wade. Neil was the husband of a current member of the Access Committee, Wendy, and he passed away last week. Like Paul, Neil was a Kingborough resident, and also like Paul, he was an architect. And Neil left a significant legacy in the municipality, and that is that he was the architect who designed this very room we're in, and in fact the whole civic centre. And so we do owe him a huge debt of gratitude for that. And so on behalf of councillors and also the Access Committee, I'd like to pay my respects to his wife Wendy and to their extended family. We turn now to page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number one, held on the 16th of January 2023, be confirmed as a true record. Got a mover in Councillor Gladewright and a seconder in Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried. Turning now to page two, workshops held since the last council meeting. We held two workshops, one on the 23rd of January in relation to risk management and the other one on the 30th of January in relation to the Kingston Park project. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor wish to declare a declaration? Councillor Midgley, Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to declare an interest in item 14.2, the DAS20224. I am a neighbour to this property and I have had discussions with the developer and representations and council staff. And I'll be leaving the room.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Declaring an interest in 17.2, the Sports and Recreation Strategy. I'm on the board of Gymnastics Tasmania and I've checked with the General Manager, I'll be staying in the room.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
I would also like to declare an interest in the Howden Development Application, DAS20224. I'm a member of the Howden Progress Association, but I haven't actually checked with Gary, but I do intend to stay in the room.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Thank you.
Excuse me, Mayor. Sorry, for the record, I have checked with Gary and he has advised, sorry, the General Manager, and he has advised that I leave the room.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. If there are no further declarations, we'll move to transfer of agenda items. Is there any item that a councillor would like to move from closed into open session or open into closed session? No, thank you. Still on page 2, Councillor's Code of Conduct. The Director of Local Government sent a letter to Council and requested that the letter be tabled on the agenda at the next Council meeting. It's not there for discussion, it's just there to be noted by councillors and also members of the community. We turn now to page 6, questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who is with us this evening, would they like to ask a question without notice? No, thank you very much. Questions on notice from the public. There was one question from Mr. Peter Walker in relation to the burnout removal on roads and an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. So if members of the public do wish to submit a question on notice for a future council meeting agenda, you can send it by email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We turn now to questions without notice from councillors. Any councillor have a question without notice? I've got Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Antoli. Councillor Fox, is your light still on? Thank you. So Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is about Auburn Road, and I'm just seeking an update about potential works on Auburn Road in Kingston. Currently, as of a few days ago when a constituent contacted me, there are still not signs up, and we're just wondering what is the hold-up with works, looking for currently no bus lines or new lines in the middle of the road. What's the expected time frame for works commencing and expected completion date for works on Auburn Road, Kingston?
Thank you. I believe Mr. Reeve will be able to help us with that. I suspect the word imminent might come in there.
Through you, Mayor, not on this occasion, I only bring that out every now and again. Certainly, there's, I guess, two different parts to it. So there is a larger project, which is the reconstruction of Auburn Road, so we're currently going through a design process for that, and that will come up in a future year. But what you're referring to, I believe, is down near the southern corner of Auburn Road there, where there's a plethora of cars that are parking. The intention was to put some line marking, which we intend to do. Our line marking on the various roads is a little bit behind schedule at the moment, just with some staffing shortages, but it will be happening sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
That's good to hear. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And through you, Mayor, my second question, or second tranche of questions, is about a feral deer, specifically on Bruny Island, but elsewhere in Kingborough. So, and apologies for not putting these on notice, but I just wanted the chance to express them here. My first question is, how many feral deer do we think there are in Kingborough, and by what mechanism are we monitoring, tracking the population increase of feral deer? The second question is, are residents encouraged to download the Feral Scan app to take photos of feral deer when they see them? Or by what other mechanism do we recommend that local residents, when they do see feral deer, by what mechanism should they best inform council officers? Third question on that is...
How about we just take them one by one for the ease of staff? And I'm going to call on Dr. Fox, ironically enough.
Yes.
Can you help? Oh, no, General Manager, sorry.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova would certainly have to take on notice the question about the number of feral deer in Kingborough.
Thanks. And the next question is about when somebody sees feral deer in the municipality, what should they do? What's Council's recommendation?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. My recommendation, Councillor Cordova, would be to, in the first instance, contact this council. I'm not aware that we've been contacted in recent times in relation to feral deer.
Thank you. My next question on this issue is, has Council progressed any operations to monitor or eradicate feral deer on Bruny or elsewhere in the municipality? And if so, could we hear a bit about what those programs are, and are they adequately resourced to ensure that feral deer don't indelibly harm Kingborough's natural assets?
The General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, I'm not aware of any council-instigated eradication program. And in terms of other areas of the state, it would be a matter we'd have to take up with the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. My final couple of questions on this are about, and this is in the context that feral deer are known to be potential vectors of very serious disease. Foot and mouth is a very serious one where you can have these reservoirs of disease spreading throughout the area where there are feral deer. So even if you eradicate the issue within agriculture, you've still got these wild or feral populations roaming around spreading very serious disease, and this could have very significant consequences for our agricultural sector. So in that context, the deer on Bruny Island, the feral deer that are there, the question really is, where did they come from? And if individuals are found to have been responsible for, through negligence or otherwise, if individuals are found to be responsible for letting feral deer out, or letting deer out, what would be council's actions? What sanctions would we put on individuals who are found to be engaging in that kind of behaviour?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, we'd have to take that question on notice, and we'll try and have a response to in the agenda for the next meeting.
Thank you. That's all. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got three questions. They've all been generated by a lot of questions from the public towards me. The first is about the imminent closure of Manor Gardens. It's been in the press. And the question is, first of all, about the when the council transferred the facility at Three Manor Gardens to the Masonic Care back in 2018, was there a covenant placed on the property title requiring that the facility remain as a day centre, given that that's what it was purpose-built for?
No, there was not.
And following on from that, is that, I realise we can't change the past, but how appropriate was that? Not putting something in.
Given that we sold it to them for a pretty good... It was a decision of the council at the time that there was an agreement, I guess, in good faith, and the Masonic Care, we believed at the time, would continue to operate the facility. There was no indication, that they wouldn't. I suspect that this has come about as a result of their merger with the other organisation, Respect. It's particularly disappointing given that we'd actually received several other expressions of interest from other providers at the time. So seems hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think we obviously chose the wrong one.
Yeah. It's fair to say, given that the organisation is, the building and the organisation is privately owned, there's very little that council can personally do on the matter. The second question is, tomorrow is the Snug memorial to the 1967 bushfire. Members of the memorial team have reached out saying they haven't heard back from council as to whether or not we will be contributing a memorial wreath, as in apparently years past. Do we have an answer on that?
The General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Antoli, thanks for the question. I was contacted last week. I responded to that contact and said that 56 years since those tragic events didn't constitute the supply of a wreath. A few years back on the 50th anniversary, appropriately made arrangements to commemorate the occasion.
Thank you. My understanding is that, correct me if I'm wrong, please, Mayor, that we have contributed at other years that weren't in the multiples of five. I've been told that we've been contributing a wreath for past several years in a row.
Yeah, I'm not the giver out of wreaths. The General Manager would have a better idea.
Through you, Mayor, Councillor Antoli, that is not my understanding.
Right. Even though a former councillor contacted me saying that he actually delivered it on behalf of council last year. That's not correct?
The General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. I'll repeat my answer. That is not my understanding, okay. Councillor Antoli.
All right. And will Council be sending any representatives to the memorial service tomorrow?
I'm not aware what the movements of any of the other members are. I've already indicated that I'm an apology. I'm unable to attend. I'm not sure that I think you're... And the Deputy Mayor is an apology as well, so I don't know. I think most other councillors would have responded if they've received the invitation on their own, but I don't keep a track of who.
Would it please the council for me to go and maybe even represent council at the event? Is that fine?
Absolutely, yep. And
okay.
Yep, thank you.
All right. So we won't be contributing a wreath this year. Okay, I will... That's the answer to that one. And my final question is regarding Adventure Bay Road. So I was at the wonderful Australia Day event down at Adventure Bay last week, and I was swamped with the number of people that were complaining to me about Adventure Bay Road, specifically that the council, as I understand it, the remediation work the council did is excellent and is holding up to the weather, but the work the contractors have done have washed away in a matter of months. And I must say that when I drove over the road, if I was wearing false teeth, they would have fallen out onto the floor. I was being jostled around so much. Is Council aware of any of the remediation work from contractors now needing further remediation work, and do we have a position on warranties of work?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, look, that's the first time I've heard of that one. I'm happy to actually investigate it further, certainly with any contractor there or any contract works they actually undertake. They're required to actually to undertake them properly there, and the intention is even if something prematurely fails, you will go back to the contractor there.
Okay.
If that's the issue.
Great.
So happy to actually investigate that one further and provide another response.
So what I'll do is, if it helps, I'll reach out to the individuals specifically and ask them on a Google map to point out exactly what they were referring to assist council with that, because I'm assuming there'd be a warranty, because they mentioned that work has been washed away in a matter of less than 3 months of what the contractors did, yet the council's work has stood the test of time and is fine.
Yeah, so the contractor would be working under the, if you like, the project management of council, so it amounts to the same thing. So
right.
Happy if you want to provide some of the location details, then we can investigate it further.
Thank you, Mayor. That's all from me.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Any further questions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Given we've got playgrounds on the agenda tonight, just wondering if it would be possible to get an update on some of the major upgrades we've got underway and the status of some of those.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. At Silverwater Park, councillors would be aware that we undertook a significant community engagement about 12 months ago that resulted in a design being prepared by our former urban design officer. Now, once that design was costed, it came in at about $1 million, and we had a budget for $250,000. So we've had to do a redesign, rescope the project. There's an allocation to upgrade the car park just by means of a gravel resheet. But the actual play equipment, our current urban design officer is doing a re-engagement with the community, just trying to prioritise within budget, and it's our intent to issue a tender for a design and construct based on that available budget very shortly. Louisa Hinsby is close to completion. The work there is being undertaken by our reserves crew, who have been unfortunately taken off that project to deal with the amount of grass growth we have lately, but as soon as they can get back on to Louisa Hinsby, we'll be able to complete that and do an official opening. Willow Bend Park, the priority works there are about renewal of the plantings, and that needs to take place in autumn rather than in the hot summer months, so we've taken advice from our natural areas units, and as I say, that'll take place in autumn. At Drew Point, we've awarded a contract and works are expected to commence within the next few weeks on that. Alamo Close, we have a landscape architect engaged and we're awaiting a draft plan. And at Spring Farm, the proposed new play space there, the results of the community engagement have been forwarded to Inspiring Place Consultants, and they're developing a plan based on that feedback, which we expect to receive this month.
Thank you very much. If there are no further questions, that takes us... Oh, sorry, beg your pardon, Councillor Dean. Sorry, I didn't see your light.
Yeah, right, sorry. At the council meeting on December 5th, council agreed to provide two public workshops on the potential zoning changes taking part as part of the new statewide planning scheme implementation, in particular about the landscape conservation zone. I know these have been confirmed to take place this month, so could we just get an update and a few details about when they'll take place and what they kind of look like?
Yeah, so I can provide some detail and then Ms Tyler Moore might want to add to the answer. We've released that information. It's on the front page of the Kingborough Council website as of today, and we've asked the Chronicle to print some information about it. There will be two sessions at this stage, Tuesday the 21st of February at Margate at the Hall from 5:30 until 7:30 p.m. The next session will be on Friday the 24th of February at the Kingborough Community Hub from 12 until 2 p.m. and there is a booking link on the website. We ask people to book in for time slots to sit down with a planner, and that's so that we are aware of, you know, I guess whether we're supplying enough slots for the demand that is there, but the idea is that members of the community come along and have a one-on-one session with a strategic planner so they can ask specific questions about their property and what the implications of the LCZ may be for them or otherwise. And, yeah, we look forward to holding those. I guess the only other thing to say is that they are very much just... These are the additional sessions that we're doing as part of the process, and of course once we get the information back from the Tasmanian Planning Commission, they will give us the go-ahead to move to the larger consultation, public consultation phase, which will go for 60 days, and there will be a variety of mechanisms which people can engage in throughout that.
Great, thank you so much. I think just to reiterate that I really appreciate those 15-minute slots. I think that'll be a good litmus test for figuring out how many people will want to engage and take advantage of those 15-minute one-on-one sessions. That sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. The first one, just wondering, and excuse me that I haven't forwarded this prior, just wondering if the GM has received a letter from Friends of North Bruny regarding the marine plastics project on Bruny Island.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor, yes, I have received a letter. I understand that they're having some challenges in getting both visitors and possibly even residents to acknowledge that it is for marine plastic as opposed to general waste.
Thank you. The second question for the Mayor's diary, if you can recall your meeting with the Kettering Community Association, any key highlights that councillors need to be aware of?
Yes, so that was really interesting. The Kettering Community Association have had a change of leadership and they have two new people amongst their executive, and they came along and had a meeting with the General Manager and myself because they're looking at just reshaping, I guess, what they do as an association rather than focusing on things that we would regard as service requests, but working out how they can work in partnership with council to value add to the area that they represent. And so we had quite a significant discussion about they have some plans, they would like to run some events in Kettering, and so we had a discussion and provided some advice about that, and hopefully that's something that they will pursue and that we can work with them on to sort of... But they're looking to bring some more vibrancy into Kettering and not just be about sort of specific projects, but trying to get a heart to Kettering. And so, we welcome them to work with our community services team as well and for advice, and certainly we look forward to hearing what they've got planned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much. This means that the open session of council now adjourns, and the planning... Oh, sorry, it adjourns at 5:53 p.m. And the planning authority commences at 5:53 p.m. takes us to page 7, Officers' Report to Planning Authority. We go first to DA 313 of 2022, Change of Use to Gymnasium and Signage, with a recommendation on page 30. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Gladride, and a seconder, Councillor Bain. Councillor Gladride.
Thank you, Mayor. So the application seeks approval for a change of use to a gymnasium at a property on Beach Road down in Kingston. I understand that the applicant has had quite a lot of frustration with this application. I think this type of case really highlights that if the people in the community are wishing to develop a property or a change of use or start a business, that it's really important that they have some early conversations with our planners and they can iron out the different areas that are a bit grey and make sure that they understand the planning process ahead of going forth. Having said that, it's good to see that the planners have been able to find a way forward with this application. I note that there are quite a few non-complying elements, but somehow they've managed to find some acceptable solutions. I note that there were three representations, and I can completely understand the concern about the noise that the gym might have on the neighbouring residential units. I've just got a question. In the advice at E, it is advised that cars should be directed to use parking spaces on the southeastern side of the car park between the hours of 9 and 7, so 9 p.m. and 7 a.m, to minimise any potential for nuisance to residential land or alternatively utilise on-street parking. I'm just wondering why that is just an advice and not a condition, given that advice clauses are somewhat weak.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it's a difficult thing to try and enforce that they have to do that, and there is a possible argument about how much difference it's going to make on one side or the other. Hopefully it would, and it would be faced away from that, and particularly if they're placed parking forward parking into the spaces, it may have some reduction. It's not something we'd necessarily stipulate, because the noise reports suggest that there will be some, but it wasn't completely unacceptable. So it's a bit grey, but it's certainly asking to try, make an effort to try and reduce some of those impacts as an advice, but it wouldn't really be something we could enforce and have parking officers down there making sure they're doing it.
Okay, thank you.
Any further speakers? Councillor Fox.
I'm quite concerned about the noise that's going to be emanating from this building, and although I understand there are lots of statements saying that we'll keep it to a certain level, it worries me that the building won't be manned at night. It'll be up to the... Won't be staffed at night. I was in a medical establishment this afternoon with a gym right next door, and the people on the counter who were serving me had this sort of heartbeat coming through the wall. It was a stone wall, and it was constant. It was from the gym next door, and I am really concerned that we're not providing any insulation in the space between this building and the neighbours next door, and no double glazing. It's just single glazing, which does not stop noise, let alone vibrations. And it's the vibrations of that noise that will penetrate the glass and will be, in my opinion, and I'm not a noise expert, but I think the vibration travels more than anything else when it comes to noise pollution. So I'm just wondering if there's somebody in the room who can assure me there will be no noise pollution. And if there is, will it be possible for us to ask in retrospect that insulation or double glazing be installed?
Thank you. Before I go to Ms. Tyler Moore, you will note that on page 16 of the report that there is reference to a noise report that was provided by the developer on the 30th of August, and that did look at the at the affected dwellings and that generally it was below the acceptable solution, but I'll ask Ms Tyler Moore to talk to that.
Through you, Mayor, the questions about noise are certainly valid. They're things that we considered, especially given the nature of the 24-hour proposal of this particular gym. It's worth understanding that we can't always assume the worst. We work in this hard space where people think we're either doing too much for too onerous and others are saying we're not doing enough. We have parameters within the planning scheme about the noise levels and they're stipulated in the conditions of the permit, including conditions 2 and 3. Condition 2 specifically asks for a noise verification report to be done to make sure that they really have, that it is what was predicted. And if they don't, the third paragraph says that they must put in any mitigation works to prevent that. Condition 3 has the maximum noise levels. So we can't really go beyond what the planning scheme's requiring. I appreciate the comments about the vibrations and the like, and certainly I don't know which facility you went to today, but conjoined buildings definitely have a far worse problem with that. That's not to say that there wouldn't be any emanating from this, and we do have facilities within our municipality that we're currently dealing with to do with noise. This is a slightly different setup that they've got in there. If they don't comply, we can do enforcement, but we have deliberately done the within 3 months of the commencement because we think that's good timing, because maybe the first couple of weeks they're really well behaved and then they get into a pattern and they've got different instructors. If they have instructors, it gives us that opportunity. But certainly before that period, if there's problems, we would then investigate and undertake enforcement to deal with that.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that, Ms Tyler Moore? Is that a standard provision? Have we put in that sort of provision before that we've asked for a noise report sort of 3 months after the granting of a permit?
Yes, we have. We do it sometimes for venues that have late-night dining or something that we would think that potentially has noise that is going to emanate and affect residential properties.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm broadly very supportive of the motion as moved, especially understanding that that it has taken quite a while for the applicant to get here. I have a couple of concerns, however, in relation to two of the conditions. One of them has just been discussed in some form by Councillor Fox and Ms Tyler Moore. I suppose the issue that I have with condition two, particularly, that requires the applicant to go and get a noise verification report within 3 months of commencement of use, is that we've already put them to the expense of getting a noise report to predict the noise levels. That report has come back and basically said that it's exceptionally unlikely that they are going to go over the levels that are detailed in condition three. And then our own environmental planners have also said that the proposal can be supported on the basis of the first report that we've had them pay for. And so I'm a bit hesitant to then ask them to go and pay for a second verification report after the fact, when the reporting and our own review of that reporting has said that it's exceptionally unlikely that they're going to exceed those levels. I'm not suggesting that we remove condition three, which sets the levels out, but I am suggesting that we're the compliance authority, and having them do what is effectively a preemptory compliance activity when there's no evidence that they're going to exceed those levels in the first place, I think is overreach. So I foreshadow that I'm going to move an amendment to remove condition two. And also I've just got a question about condition 10. It's the first time that I can recall ever seeing a condition like that. And I'm just wondering what the planning scheme basis for the inclusion of that condition is, please.
So condition 10, just for those who are wondering, is graffiti on the site which is visible to the public must be removed promptly to the satisfaction of the Manager of Development Services. Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the conditions often applied to commercial and industrial applications for an ability to keep it neat and tidy. the planning scheme, and I couldn't off the top of my head tell you specifically which part of the scheme does make reference to the properties being neat and tidy, want for a better phrase. So it's not unusual for it to be used in those. We don't put them on residential properties, but more so for the commercial industrial ones for an appropriate presentation to the public realm.
Councillor Street.
I appreciate the answer. I just find it interesting that we're going to impose that on a change of use when, in all likelihood, no other business in Kingston Beach has a condition like that overseen by council. I don't doubt the utility of it, but I think that is overreach also. So, Mayor, I move to strike conditions 2 and 10, please.
Okay, so could you provide Mrs. Morton with a set of words?
No set of words required, just a strike.
So your amendment would be that you would like
to remove.
Yep.
Conditions 2 and
2 10. 2 and 10. Okay, I'll need a seconder. Oh, is it acceptable to the mover and the seconder of the motion? So, Councillor Gladright and Councillor Bain. Can you voice that for the purpose of the tape?
Yes.
Councillor Gladright?
No, I'm not happy with that. I'm sorry.
Okay, so we'll take it as an amendment then. So, the amendment is to remove conditions 2 and 10 of the recommendation. Do I have a seconder for that? Seconded by Councillor Dean. Councillor Street on the amendment.
Mayor, I think I've given my reasons for moving the amendment sufficiently without taking up any more time.
Any further speakers on the amendment? I've got Councillor Cordover and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I won't be supporting this amendment. I appreciate the intent. I don't think that 2 and 10 are onerous, and I think that they make a lot of sense and they go some way to allaying some of the fears that have been raised in the representations that have been submitted to us. So I think it's an important kind of meeting the community halfway. I think many of us can see the benefits of what this proposal brings, but we also have to keep in mind that there's some community concern and we need to do our best to ameliorate that. I think that they're not overly onerous. I wish this business, should it all go ahead tonight, I wish it every success, but I also think that there's a give and a take here, and I don't think that these are too onerous. I think that that they should meet us halfway, and so that's why I won't be supporting Councillor Street's amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordover. Councillor Fox?
I won't be supporting the removal of item 2 because I think a noise verification report is something that is quite expensive, and if the developer doesn't provide it, then it would be up to the residents next door who are impacted by the noise to organise themselves into paying for something like this. Either that or council has to pay for it. And this is a business, and I think it's part of the cost of doing business, is making sure that you're not intruding unnecessarily and intrusively onto your neighbours for their own benefit as much as anybody else's. So all the reassurances in the world are fine, but when it comes down to having a clause in here on paper saying there must be a noise verification report, I think that is a very good safeguard for council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. It's probably fair to characterise the business owner as not a developer but a small business owner. He is about 30 years of age, has spent tens of thousands of dollars on this already, and I'm sure, there's no disrespect, Councillor Fox is meaning, but I think it's best to characterise this individual as a young man having a go with extensive experience in this space. And the burden on him up till date has been enormous on his mental health as well as delayed plans. So it's probably good to just keep that in mind as regulators, as we not forget not just the legal element but the human element here as well.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Dean.
Clause 2, I think if we have a compliance department at this council, that we have a planning scheme to adhere to, and they must adhere to that. I really can't understand why it would be preempting to make them go to the expense of doing this thing. So I agree with Councillor Street for question, Clause 2. And Clause 10, if it's true that there is not another
business in Kingston Beach that has this requirement, then I'm also not supporting that. But I have to make the point there that I think it's in any business interest to remove the graffiti regardless, but to make it an actual requirement and promptly, if they haven't got the money or the time or the resources at that minute, I find that a bizarre potential bit of overreach there. So I'm more than happy to second this and hopefully it gets up.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. In regards to the preempting, and I guess understanding, I'm sure other businesses have been in the same situation of having to require a noise report. Would that be correct?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, we have had the same condition on other proposals.
Thank you.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Can I just ask a question of what would be the process if a neighbour complains about the noise, if this establishment is approved?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, if we were to receive a complaint about noise, we would log it and investigate it. If it's obviously much easier if it's during business hours. If it's outside business hours, then we need to develop a plan for that investigation. And in the instance of noise, we don't have qualified people to measure the noise in that fashion. We need to appoint a consultant to do that, and we have had to do that in recent times to do with compliance matters to do with noise with a gym. So that's the usual process. I can explain the process thereafter, but I think you're just interested in the investigation.
Yeah, so the cost is borne by council?
The cost would be borne by council in that instance, yes.
Councillor Gladright.
So how much would a noise verification report cost the applicant? Does anyone know?
Through you, Mayor, I don't know the exact cost of what that would be. I know that the noise testing that we had undertaken recently was somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500, but that was for an investigative one from different properties within inside their private properties. You know, that this would just be within their own site to investigate that, so I would think it would be far less than that.
Thank you. I'm going to speak against the amendment. Like I was saying earlier, I think this really highlights that if people are wanting to start businesses, that they have these early conversations with planners to iron out some of these things early on so that they don't get too far down the process having spent lots of money and then find that there's lots of problems. So given that this is going to be a 24-hour gym, I think that a noise verification report is reasonable. If it was going to cease trade at 10 p.m, then maybe in that instance I'd consider it to be overreach. But given that it's going to be a 24-hour gymnasium next to a residential area, I don't consider this too much at this point.
Councillor Antoli, with a question, because you've spoken on the amendment. Thank you. With a question.
Will this noise report down the line within 3 months or whatever else, I forget exactly, would that be required to be done at night? The bulk of the concern is base noise after 9 p.m. The applicant has said they will make sure there's no music and that it will be turned off. There is scepticism from the community as to whether or not that'll happen, and I've simply told those people you make a complaint when there's a violation. But what's the position on that stipulation, whether the noise test should be daytime or nighttime when the majority of the concern is nighttime?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we would expect that the assessment be done at different periods during the day. To ascertain it, if they can't do it when no one's there, that would obviously be foolish. It's the same as we do with traffic counts. It's not appropriate to do it on a public holiday. So we would have an expectation that it's done at different times and in the evening, not necessarily 9 o'clock. It might be earlier than that when people are at home having their dinner, watching TV and the like, and so we would need to have that discussion with them. Just on the comment about that they said it would be turned off, their application says it will be turned down or turned off, as it's written in the report, so it didn't say that it was going to definitely be turned off.
Thank you, Ms. Tullamore. Any further discussion on the amendment? Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
The only thing to say in summing up, Mayor, is with respect to Condition 2, I would say that comparing the cost to council and the cost to the applicant in relation to the verification report is a false economy. And the reason that I say that is that the verification report is not going to prevent a complaint if one is to be made. I think it's very unlikely that a verification report is going to satisfy a resident if they are inclined to make a complaint. So we are going to be back in the position of having to act as the compliance authority, as is our statutory obligation, regardless of whether this verification report is done or not. And my view is that the applicant has done everything possibly that they could to satisfy us that they are going to comply, and anything other than that is akin to finding them guilty of a compliance issue before one's arisen.
Thank you, Councillor Street. So I'll put the amendment. It's as printed on the screen, and the amendment was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Dean. It is to remove conditions 2 and 10 of the recommendation. All those in favour, say against. A show of hands is required. All those in favour is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street and Reet. And those against is Councillors Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Gladewright. The amendment is carried. So that will now, we're back on the substantive motion. So the substantive motion is without points 2 and 10. So far on the substantive motion, we've had the following speakers: the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Fox, and Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question about the car parking and noting in the report that there's a monthly market. I note that it was an agreement between the previous op shop that was in the building and the market owners, and now that agreement ceased. But noting that was a well-attended and utilised market and a space in that car parking area, I'm just wondering if I could perhaps have some more information in regards to that moving forward, if, say, the market would still like to use that car parking space.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, my understanding of the arrangement between the two premises was a, want for a better word, gentleman's agreement. There wasn't a formal lease agreement or a Part 5 agreement with the use of that. If the gym had wanted to maintain that occurring on the site, it would have had to form part of the permit, and it would need to be considered, and it's likely that the gym would not operate during that time when it was on, because otherwise there's no car parking. You're pushing it out onto the public parking, which is then taking away or competing further with the other businesses that use that public car parking as well. So the applicant didn't include any mention of the market going forward or continuing or the arrangement, and there's no legal obligation or lease or anything else binding the use of that car park with the markets.
Thank you. And were any comms provided to the operators of the market? Or is that outside the...
I think we're veering outside of the scope of the realm of the Planning Authority at the moment, so you can take that one offline if you like. Are there further contributions on the substantive motion? Okay, if not, I'm going to put the motion. It's as has previously been indicated. Councillor Bain.
Sorry, just one last question. Under the advice, letter F on page 32, where it talks about other events such as major competitions not being permitted by this planning permit. Just wondering, is there any further information about that one?
Through you, Mayor. There was some mention, and certainly was in media release as well, about suggestions of having things like strongman competitions or other events or public events, a whole plethora of things that were suggested. The application wasn't really supported with any information about those. They were felt to be more commentary, but it was important to say that it's not permitted. If you had an event of that nature, you would really need to consider how many people are going to attend, how it's going to be managed, is it appropriate, and is it really a nexus between the typical operation of a gym? So if you had another retail premises that had a fashion show that was going to attract 300, we wouldn't necessarily say that's the same as just operating a T-shirt shop in the main street. So it would need some proper consideration. It's not to say that it could never occur, but it needs to have further approvals and consideration of the appropriateness of those sorts of events in that location with the limitations that it has and Kingston Beach has. So it may be possible, but it's not approved in this planning permit, or not recommended for approval in this planning permit.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. If there are no further comments, Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up?
Just to wish the applicant every success with his new business.
Thank you very much. So I'll put the recommendation. It's the amended motion with the previous clauses 2 and 10 now removed as per the amendment, moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 56 and we're on DA number 4, 2022, subdivision creating 7 lots and 1 road lot at 388, 398 and 402 Howden Road, part of 366 Howden Road, Howden and Crown Road Reserve in Howden Road, with a recommendation on page 82. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Oh, thank you, pardon.
Through you, Mayor, before you get a mover or a seconder, if I could just draw to Council's attention that in the recommendation, the reference at 1A should be to condition 12, not 11.
Page number, sorry.
I'm looking at page 82. Amanda, if you can go back up to 1, please. So you'll see there where on the screen where it refers to A, that should read condition 12, not 11. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, General Manager. So I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move, Councillor Gladewright. Seconder? Councillor Street. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. So this subdivision application is over 3 properties and it's proposing the creation of 7 lots and a road lot. I've received quite a few representations about this, and I know that there has been a lot of information that has been flying around this afternoon on email, but I do have a couple of further questions, if I may. The report talks about the available site distance of 75 metres that's being from the road lot to the corner on Stinkpot Bay being marginally less than the 80 metres required to satisfy the acceptable solutions in Table E5.1. The traffic impact statement provided a measurement of typical vehicle speed from the north around the curves of 45 kilometres an hour, which would basically mean that it would be okay because the minimum site distance per table E5.1 was according to a vehicle speed of 50 kilometres an hour. So I guess the traffic impact statement is saying that because the cars will be travelling slower, that the 75 metres becomes acceptable rather than the required 80 metres. But the question that was raised by some of the representatives was that traffic counters were installed in 2006, and that study found that most of the cars were actually travelling about 60 kilometres an hour. So I'm just wondering if that those traffic counter, that report from those traffic counters were taken into consideration.
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not aware of the traffic counter study that was undertaken in 2006, I think you referred to, but the assessment was based on the conditions of the road, the traffic impact assessment, and then by the council planners, and found it to be acceptable. for the performance criteria, acknowledging it doesn't meet the acceptable solution, but found the performance criteria was satisfactory.
Deputy Mayor.
Okay. It's really hard to make a decision, isn't it, when you're being told one thing and then another thing. Just in regards to the pump station, it says in the report that they consider the pump transfer station to be adequate, but the anecdotal reports from the community is that it's not adequate. So can we get some assurance that it is adequate, please?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I don't doubt the anecdotal advice from the residents who live there. I certainly don't live there, so I'm not sure. But we, Council, Kingborough Council, is not the authority for the pump station or the sewer, unfortunately. The best we can do is rely on Taswater to give us that advice. So the application was referred to them. They're well aware of the increase, and there would be a fair increase from this additional lots and the additional development that would go with that. And they have come back to say that they're satisfied, they didn't impose any additional conditions. It's down to their business model about how they deal with contributions or upgrades, but we haven't had an indication from that. And unfortunately, because it's not ours, not our asset, we haven't got the ability to rule above Taswater, but certainly we have passed the comments on by the residents that that's happening, and we can certainly... Council generally can certainly still ask for investigation or looking at it or recommendation, but that wouldn't be the role of the planning authority and it shouldn't be part of the decision making for this particular application.
Okay, thank you. One further question. It says in the report that as the development is not able to provide a public open space component of substantial community benefit in accordance with the guidelines, then cash in lieu will be required. I was just wondering if anyone considered that next to the road lot is the Howden Hall, and next to, well, just below the Howden Hall is a big gravel car park which needs a bit of attention. So there's going to be a nice shiny new road and then this really old gravel car park. Was it considered at all that for the open space contribution that that area could have been improved?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, our applications are considered by a number of teams that do with our public open space and our tracks and trails team, and they didn't come back with any comments, and the suggestion of upgrading a car park I don't think would be appropriate use of expenditure for this as public open space. It really wouldn't meet the policy of expectations of how that is spent. I think that would be different, and I don't know offhand about what the arrangements are about the ownership of the building or the lot or anything like that, but it wouldn't meet the requirements of public open space contribution.
Okay, thank you.
Further speakers, Councillor Fox.
In relation to the car park, there is quite a concern about the drawings that have been provided not really being very precise and accurate in terms of the rollover curb that's promised. I mean, there's been quite a modification of the original design of the road, and then the reduction in width and not having a footpath, and now the drawings aren't really indicative of the final outcome that is being negotiated between the developer and council staff, I understand. But the Howden Progress Association owns that hall and the car park and the fire brigade land. So that is not part of this subdivision. This is a private subdivision that is going down the side of that property. So we can't expect the developer to provide something that's not on their land, and the Progress Association would have to be willing. And that car park is extensively used, as it says in the report, both by the Progress Association and the fire brigade. So that would not be an appropriate place for a playground. But I've been speaking with the planner this afternoon, or this morning actually, about the intention and the agreements and the negotiations that have been occurring. And I think as the work gets done and the underground services become apparent where they should go and where they can go in relation to the trees and also the road. I guess the final drawings will emerge, but at this point in time it's a bit disappointing not to see the final drawings, but I guess it's got to be reflective of reality as it, the project develops. So having said that, I do support the application, and I had concerns also about traffic issues, but I've been reassured that the council engineers have confirmed that the percentile speed at that area is 50k, and therefore it's just 5 metres below the site distance, but it is acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Are there further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. At its heart, I've spent a long time thinking about this one, and at its heart, it doesn't comply with Clause 10.8.1, Performance Criteria 1B and C. Moderate biodiversity values present must be protected by subdivision works being designed and located to minimise impacts having regard to constraints such as topography or land hazard and the particular requirements of the subdivision. That's a subjective statement, but that's what we're having to work with. So to protect high priority biodiversity values, specifically the eucalyptus, ovata, forest and woodland, it requires subdivision works to be designed and located to minimise impact. And as it says on page 73 under item 6, clearance and conversion or disturbance will not substantially detract from the conservation status of the biodiversity values in the vicinity of the development. Well, what we're looking at this site is that the Ovata Forest and Woodland is indeed a threatened native vegetation community under the Nature Conservation Act 2002. It's a high priority biodiversity value under Table E 10.1 of the scheme. Also, the area dominated by Ovata black gum trees over cleared land and of high and very high conservation value and a moderate priority under Table E 10.1 of the scheme. So that's what we're looking at. And I think it's very easy, because it keeps referring to it throughout the report as 0.045 hectares. What we're actually talking about, that's 450 square metres. We're talking about basically a suburban lot size of vegetation that's going to be impacted. And indeed, the report fairly notes that there will be this impact. And then the question, I think, the key question for me becomes, to what extent is this minimum impact? And I'm going to try and unpack that briefly, if I may. The key question... I support the fact that this proposal has been redesigned to attempt to minimise impact. However, has the redesign been sufficient to justify the removal of the threatened native vegetation community? In my opinion, it has not, and therefore it does not meet that performance criteria. Importantly, I think when we're looking at something the size of a suburban block, I took a quick look at the Department of Natural Resources and Environment Tasmania, where they talk about most patches of this Ovata Forest and Woodland Threatened Vegetation Community. Most patches are small, with an average patch size of less than 10 hectares identified in the Threatened Native Vegetation Communities 2020 document. And it goes on to say old growth stands are extremely rare. So we need to have in mind, when determining the highly subjective notion of minimise impact, as the scheme talks about, we need to, you know, my version of minimise impact is different, clearly, from the officer that wrote the report, and I think reasonable minds may differ. But fundamentally, we have to have mind to the context. The protection of threatened high-priority native vegetation is crucial. If this proposal doesn't meet the scheme, then we have the discretion to say... doesn't meet the performance criteria. And I'm looking at the performance criteria, and I respectfully disagree with the officer's statement, specifically when it says this loss is unavoidable. I think it is avoidable. I think it hasn't been avoided by this proposal. And I intend with my vote to try and avoid it. And I'll be doing that by making... When I vote against this, the reason for it is that it doesn't meet the scheme, it doesn't meet the performance criteria. It's worth noting that a significant number of local residents oppose it, and so fundamentally I think it's inappropriate because it doesn't meet the scheme and because it's not supported by the local community and because it doesn't meet E 10.8.1. So that's why I'll be voting against.
Thanks. Councillor Cordova, I will ask Ms Tyler-Moore to respond to those comments. Can I just remind you that when we sit as a planning authority, we don't have the luxury of assessing something on the basis of whether the local community supports it or not. And that's something that it is one of the difficult positions that we are put in. We are asked to, by law, we have to assess every application based on the merits against the planning scheme, and whether we get 500 letters from people saying they like something or 500 letters from people saying that they don't, it's not a popularity poll or a survey from that intents and purpose, and we need to be very careful that we don't create a sense of expectation that we can vote against something purely because we don't like it or members of the community don't like it. We don't have that luxury, and it would be disingenuous to perpetuate that myth that we have that option when we don't. So,
thanks, but to be clear, the reason why I'll be voting against is because it doesn't meet the performance criteria and therefore it fails against the planning scheme. So that's, let's be very clear, why I'm voting. It's not about what people think, it's about what the planning scheme says.
Point of order, Mayor.
Councillor Street on the point of order.
Councillor Cordova is being disruptive and interrupting you, and I'd ask him to withdraw.
Vexatious.
I think we can do better than this. But I just, yeah, you did make reference to the fact that it should be voted against because members of the community didn't like it. So that's why I am...
Sorry, point of order, because we need to... Point of order, and this is on mischaracterisation. I think I made very clear in my statement the performance criteria that I said that this proposal fails to meet. So I think
I'm pretty sure the sentence in there somewhere was that members of the community
I've certainly
don't
read
like
the representations,
it.
Absolutely. I've read them.
Yes, as we all have. Thank you. Ms Tyler Moore in relation to the performance criteria.
Through you, Mayor, the lost where we were in the thing, but I should say that the comments about the vegetation and the values of the vegetation and the importance of vegetation is also captured by the planning scheme, so we do consider vegetation. It does talk about low, medium and high, that it's not something that is invented, it's in the scheme, and the calculations are there. The application itself will lose vegetation. We acknowledge that. Some vegetation has been retained. We're in this usual irony of people say we are too green, others say that we're not green enough. We do our best to balance. Acknowledge the applicant has responded to the representations by changing the plans again when they didn't necessarily have to try and retain some vegetation. There's still some question marks about how much will end up be, but the intent certainly seems to be there to try and retain some of that vegetation on that roadway, and we've compromised on that road design to enable that. But safety is still paramount, safety is satisfied, and not that I want to come in between any arguments around the chamber that may have occurred. I just want the public to understand that if representations are made, we are obliged under the Act to consider representations. Now, there's a difference between opinions and thoughts and general vibes of councils, of residents, and whether they support something or not. But if a representation is made, we are obliged under the Act to consider that, and we always address that in our council reports, and they're fully considered.
Thank you, Ms Tyler Moore. Is there any further discussion? Councillor Glade-Wright, would you like to sum up? Okay. So I'm going to put the recommendation as printed on page 82. It was moved by Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street, Glade-Wright and Reet, those against, Councillor Cordova. Sorry, I should have indicated previously that Councillor Midgley had left the room for the debate at the commencement of this because she had declared an interest, therefore she's not voting. So the motion is carried and Councillor Midgley will return to the room. The Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session of Council recommences at 6:37 p.m. We are on page 118, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition headed Recall and Revise the Draft Local Provisions Schedule is on page 124 of this agenda. Still on page 118, at the time the agenda was compiled, no further petitions had been received. And we are waiting for officers' reports to council, future of local government review. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. We've got a recommendation on page 121. Move Councillor Gladewright. Seconded. Councillor Street. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you, Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to enable Council to consider the future of local government review options paper review stage two. There were six of the councillors who attended the information sessions today. It was a very valuable and worthwhile experience going through. They had a series of questions that were workshopped, and they've come up with three broad approaches to achieving consolidation. The first one being significant mandated sharing and consolidation of services. The second is boundary consolidation to achieve fewer, larger councils. That point was made quite clearly. And the third option is a hybrid model combining both targeted sharing of services and targeted boundary consolidation. Over the next few months, Council will be provided the opportunity to form a position on the review and lodge a submission with the Local Government Board. So it'd be interesting, perhaps, if tonight we could get a bit of a feel for what people are thinking out of the three options. For my own opinion, I think that a hybrid model combining both targeted sharing of services and targeted boundary consolidation would be the best. For me, it is the targeted boundary consolidation, so rather than just lumping existing LGAs together, it would be looking at a strategic approach to those boundary adjustments. But it would be very worthwhile if we could get a bit of a sense from the other councillors as to what they were thinking.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. Before I throw it open to others to comment, we do need to have something into the review in a fortnight. The submissions close on the 19th of February, so we will probably be a day or two late, but I understand that the board are happy with that. As the Deputy Mayor has indicated, today's session was really valuable in terms of understanding what exactly is being proposed, but also hearing from some of the other councils, because the session was not just Kingborough, but there were representatives from Clarence and Huon Valley there. And so it is, it would greatly assist staff who are going to prepare a report that we consider at the next meeting if councillors could provide some feedback this evening. We have circulated previously the link to the report with the three options, as the Deputy Mayor has indicated. Like she has indicated, I believe that the hybrid model is the most workable in terms of moving forward to local government reform, because I don't think it's a situation of one size fits all. And we do need to have a combination of, or the state government, I should say, needs to have a combination of tools available to get the best outcomes for all of the communities across Tasmania in local government areas. And what is suitable in one may not be suitable in another. And this hybrid model would provide that flexibility where appropriate to be able to adapt dependent on what councils are involved and what the requirements would be. So I believe that that is a positive moving forward, but I'll be interested to hear what other councillors have got to say. And I've got Councillor Dean next, and then Councillor Antoli.
Yeah, look, I'm just going to support that position already made by the Deputy, Deputy Mayor and the Mayor in terms of going forwards with a hybrid model. I don't think either just mandating service consolidation or just boundary consolidation is going to achieve what is being set out in that options paper of the goals it wants to achieve. And I think clearly, given Tasmania's unique, population spread, for want of a better term, lends itself to, we need to be realistic that it can't just be one or the other. It's going to end up being a bit of both. So I'll just keep it there and support the hybrid model.
Thank you. Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I also support the hybrid model. I do so because I believe the other two aren't comprehensive enough. The boundary consolidation model is too ham-fisted, in my opinion, especially if you can't solve a region-wide problem by bringing together two balance sheets and expecting that to solve everything. It won't. Let's all try that with an unequal marriage and see how long that'll last. I don't support the mandated sharing of and consolidation of services. I think it tinkers around the edges. It doesn't deal with things like governance. I think the hybrid model with the targeted consolidation is the best way to go. I think the devil will be in the details as who decides who's targeted to merge. But these things are somewhat out of our hands. My only parting comment is I don't believe our electorate understands how big this is. This is the biggest change in local government in maybe two generations. And I think there needs to be a lot of communication happening, and I think there needs to be far more communication from the state government than there has been to let people know, because we want our local community to own this too.
Thank you, Councillor Ntoli. I think I think it was discussed today at the meeting that there were... it's not a very sexy topic that people have engaged with, and that I think there were only 60-odd submissions that came into the review from members of the community around Tasmania, which is not a high rate of engagement whatsoever. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I was there today, and it was interesting. And it's important that whilst I speak in a kind of lacklustre way in favour of the hybrid model, I think it was important to note that our table thought that there should be an option four, and that really this kind of binary or, three options, not binary, I guess, but it really isn't enough. Maybe the option four should actually be to devolve more power to local government authorities, because they are at the front line. They're the ones who are at the closest to the community. They're not far removed as the state government is. They're actually doing the work and providing the services. And so maybe the fourth option should actually be more autonomy to local councils and more financial resources given to local councils to actually do our job the best that we can do it. Now, I think one of my main concerns about option one, this is the notion that we're going to significantly and mandated share and consolidate services. And really what I'm talking about mostly here is actually option two, boundary consolidation to achieve fewer and larger councils. One of my main concerns is the loss of the personal touch of council. That's one of the things that's so good about the council, is you can contact your local councillor, you can walk into the civic centre, and your local council should be quite close to where you are. I don't know if you've ever tried to get a new bank card or talk to a telecom company and you're stuck on a robocall in a call centre, or they're constantly driving you. Have you tried our website? Why don't you look at our website? The personal touch of council is what's so good about it. And I really fear that, what does it mean if there are amalgamations with larger councils? What does it mean for somebody living on Bruni? What does it mean for somebody living in Middleton trying to access services that are already quite far away? Will that just push them further away? And will it mean more people being pushed towards dealing with robocalls and call centres and trying to get access to services via an online portal that never really seems to work? That's a real danger. And my question is really, when the number of councils was halved in 1993, did rates drop by half? I don't think they did. Did service provision double? I don't think it did. Why is it that in New South Wales, where 18 of the 19 mergers in New South Wales have been financial basket cases, why is that? So where's the evidence, really, that these forcible amalgamations are actually going to provide real, tangible benefit to local community members? This notion of efficiencies really... oftentimes what that means, what that efficiencies refers to, is just getting the same amount of stuff done but taking longer to do it. Now, I realise that there are many areas, maybe it's payroll, maybe it's cybersecurity, in ICT, maybe there are many areas where you could consolidate and have just one cybersecurity department operating for all of the councils around the state. Maybe that would work, for all I know. But I am very concerned about service
delivery when it comes to fewer councils. So I do speak in support of a hybrid model, but I also do think that more recognition needs to be given to the fundamentally important work, the granular work that takes place at councils, where local community members are close to the people that represent them. And this is, you know, we did talk about a ward system. Now, this is a long time before my time, so I have no idea whether a ward system worked or didn't for Kingborough. But what I do want to point out is that the closer people are to their elected representatives, and the closer the community is to the decision-making that impacts that community, the better off we all are. So I just hope that in this review process and in the reform process that takes place following, I really hope that we don't lose the personal touch of local councils. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up?
No, just that I look forward to workshopping this more with everybody and forming an official position.
Thank you very much. I'll put the recommendation now. It is that Council hold a workshop to discuss the future local government review options, paper review stage two, and receive a further report that... Okay, this, last time I checked, there were 30 days in April. Always have been right through my 54 years. Just checking. Can I just clarify that? Sorry, before I put that, can I just ask a question? Because it was my understanding that we needed to have something back to this by a few days after the 19th of February, like as in a fortnight. The 30th of April would seem too close to the end of the process.
Through you, Mayor. Given the discussion tonight, it would be my intention to get a report back to the next council meeting and seek further clarification from the Local Government Board on the latest possible date that a further submission could be lodged. And the reason I say that, Mayor, is that, like many of the councillors today, along with many of my colleagues and colleagues from Clarence and Huon Valley and Southern Midlands, I attended the staff information session, and at the commencement of our council meeting tonight, the community, those that have RSVP'd, will be attending a community session. So the board are genuinely trying to get feedback. My understanding is that they would welcome feedback before the 24th of February. It's officially the 19th, but they've indicated unofficially that they'll accept something to the 24th, so that would enable me to get a report to the next council meeting to address the questions specifically that relate to the three options that they've put forward, and also give me the opportunity on your behalf to see when we would be able to put in the latest possible submission.
Thank you. Okay, so now that we've decided that there aren't 31 days in April as well, I'll put the recommendation as printed on the screen, moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried. We turn now to page 122, Kingborough Sport and Recreation Strategy, with a recommendation on page 123. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved Councillor Dean, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Dean.
Yep, I'm happy to move this. What we're discussing here is a report that highlights that Kingborough's previous 10-year sport and rec strategy has actually lapsed, and we've got, obviously, 10 years later, new challenges and opportunities that we need to respond to. For those that have read the last strategy, it obviously makes very interesting reading. In some ways, there's some level that it's a bit outdated, but actually in some ways there's a lot of things that we hear time and again. But the new strategy needs to be devised, which has actually been decided this time to be done in-house rather than have it done externally, which I think is a really good opportunity for us as a council and as a staff. To that end, the report recommends that we need to set up a reference group set up that assists the delivering of that strategy, and we need to appoint a chair and a proxy to assist staff in delivering that reference group.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley, and then we'll have to call for nominations. So at the moment, let's just discuss the concept of the strategy, and then I will call for nominations for those two positions to form part of the recommendation. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions about the working group. So will there be a number of people capped to be on the working group? I couldn't see that. I read it a few times.
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor. The intent is that this would be an informal group. However, experience would suggest that once you get beyond a certain number, it does become unwieldy. So the intent would be to see who we get through an expression of interest process, and then look to form a group with, I would suggest, a number of about around a dozen.
Great, thank you. Noting for the, as chair of the LGBTIQA plus action plan and working group, there was in consultation to the terms of reference, then developing the questions and that sort of a thing, and then the further consultation went out to the community. So I assume it will be a similar model where you'll have a working group, discussions inside the working group, and then consultation will occur out to the community. Is that correct?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct.
And do we have a time frame? I feel like it's a big conversation. I was contemplating putting my name down, not as chair, but as second, but I feel like the time frame could be quite lengthy considering many discussions to be had to develop the strategy.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, if this is approved tonight, the intent would be to immediately seek expressions of interest. In terms of the time frame, that will need to be fairly fluid depending on what issues come up, what level of engagement is required. So, I mean, I would hope that the process could be wrapped up this calendar year, but it could be sooner, it could be longer. It really does depend on, you know, the amount of work involved, and whether there's a need to bring in external consultants to be part of the process.
Thank you. Yes, I thought it could be very how long's a piece of string type thing in developing this strategy. And so noting that Councillor Dean, and in the report as well, he said, you know, it can be done in-house, but because of not knowing actually how the strategy might develop and what expertise that there is, like how much does a strategy like this sort of cost? What would be the budget for this as well?
Mr. Smee. Too many lights.
Through you, Mayor, if we were to put this out wholly and solely as a consultancy, I'd suggest you'd be looking at $50,000. I envisage doing a lot of this work in-house, potentially all of it in-house. It really does depend on what model we choose and what level of community consultation and engagement and what format that takes place. So certainly if we were going to put it all out, and that's doing the engagement, writing the report, doing the research, then 50k is what you're looking at. But so, you know, it's anywhere between in-house, which will cost us nothing except staff time, to that sort of figure.
Next, I had Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's a great strategy. I think it hits a balance, and I wanted to compliment the council staff for coming up with options. What the community probably doesn't see is the behind-the-scenes modelling, the workshopping that was done in the lead-up to this. This wasn't just four options that were plucked out of someone's hat. It was actually discussed, and there's a lot of feedback there. So it's really good to go to the community with some choice. I'm all for freedom and freedom of choice. So well done.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Yes, I agree. It's an excellent idea getting the community involved to have their say as well. I think they really appreciate it. I just have one question. On the councillor to be appointed as proxy, is that in a role to step in if the chair is not available, or is that in a role almost like the other committees where there's a deputy chair attending the meetings, etc.?
You've taken the question right out of my mouth, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, given this is a reference group, either or, I mean, I would be more than happy if there were two councillors represented on the group, but if we only had one as chair and one who was available to step in when the chair was unavailable, that would be fine as well. But, you know, given this is an informal group, I think that there is that level of flexibility for either option to be adopted.
Okay. Are there any further discussions or questions? If not, I'm going to the easiest way we can deal with this. We have two positions that we need to fill. So firstly, I would ask for nominations for councillors who would like to put themselves forward as chair of the group. Councillor Dean, you've already indicated that. Are there other councillors who would like to nominate as chair? Too easy. So the recommendation would be that Councillor Dean be appointed as chair of the group. So are there any nominations for councillors to be appointed as proxy? We've got a nomination, Councillor Aaron Tolley, Councillor Bain and Councillor Midgley. So a ballot is required. I believe Mr Smee has got some ballot papers. He will collect them. Oh, did you? Excellent. One name. So just to be clear, and for those who are watching along at home, we're just, because we have three nominations for the proxy position on a reference group for the Kingborough Sport and Recreation Strategy, we're required to have a secret ballot, so we're just going through the process of voting at the moment. The three nominees are Councillor Midgley, Councillor Antolli and Councillor Bain, so you're just voting for one person. Beg your pardon?
If there's an equal number of votes.
We vote again. We've done that before. I knew there was a big gap in the middle there for a reason. And just while we are counting the votes, it's 7 o'clock, I think. What have we got next? What's our next item? I think we might actually have a quick break prior to starting the next item, because we have got a lot on the agenda tonight. We're going to need a 10-minute comfort break. Oh. Okay. So it looks like there are an equal number of votes for two candidates. That doesn't help you. That doesn't help. So Councillor Midgley is out. So now we have to have another. Oh no! Sorry. Beg your pardon. What? No. Oh, hang on. Oh, right. Are you sure you want to do that? Okay, let's have the result. I can't read from here, so.
So there is a
for microphone.
For Councillor Midgley and Councillor Antolli.
Okay. So if Councillor Bain would like to withdraw, then we can vote again. Okay, that seems the most democratic way to do it. Motion, yeah. One more name. And just a reminder, you can vote for yourselves, candidates. So the choices now are Councillor Midgley or Councillor Antolli, and you may vote for yourself if you're on the ballot paper. I provided that clarification because I've been asked that question before. Am I allowed to vote for myself? Of course you are. Thank you. 5 all.
Flip a coin.
There's...
Can they share? Can we have three? Can they all go?
There's no reason why we can't have two proxies. No, no, you don't need... No. To my mind, there's no reason. I mean, we're the masters of our own destiny here. There's no reason why we can't have two proxies, if that's the will. But if you really want to withdraw, I can't stop you from doing that, but it's nice to see enthusiasm from everyone. Yep. So we need to slightly amend C then, so C be that councillors Antoli and Midgley be appointed as proxies. No wrestling. Okay, so the motion is as printed on the screen. So we've now got Councillor Dean as Chair, Councillor Zantoli and Midgley be appointed as proxies. So it was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. I'm also now looking for a motion that the ballot papers be destroyed. Moved Councillor Gladright, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. So as foreshadowed, I'm going to call a 10-minute recess and we will be back just at about 7.16. That clock is really out. Yeah, about 7.15. Thank you very much. For those watching at home, we will be back in 10 minutes.